You're listening to WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM. This is Ecologic. We are coming to you live. We are in the process of getting set up, so we're sorry that we do not have our music at this moment correctly placed for your listening pleasure. These radio waves are our best, and we are learning as we go. It's time for a little bit of... Okay, here we go. We're just going to have to go without the music. Sorry, folks. Okay, my name is David Occhiuto, and we are working here with Hector Rivera from the Welfare Poets, Hector, and we have Ken Estee from New York Peace Action. We have Faye Muir from the Croton Watershed Clean Water Coalition, Pika Trinkle from the New Jersey Education Circuit, and she is a natural health ecologist, and Ken Gale at the board. How are we doing, Ken? Welcome to the second edition of Ecologic.
Our website is www.comicbookradioshow/ecologic. That's ECO-LOGIC. Today we're talking about the ecology of war. But first, a few announcements. David.
Okay. Briefly on the watershed, we're in a situation where it's quite critical with the Westchester County Airport expansion. The forces that want to expand the airport create a LaGuardia-style facility on the edges right up against the reservoir, the Kensico Reservoir, which is perhaps such a critical spot in the watershed where the emissions and the runoff severely affect the public health quality of our water. We're asking people to please get in touch with the Croton Watershed Clean Water Coalition and learn more about what they can do to plug into the efforts to protect the watershed in many of the different locations that will then add up to an entire holistic protection. The website to look into for this is newyorkwater.org, www.newyorkwater, fully spelled out, .org, 212-985-0519, phone number 212-989-0519. Now, on Indian Point, we have a pretty amazing situation that has developed. There has been a woman, Marilyn Ellie, who has been arrested over the weekend for petitioning without a permit, and she has been in a situation of in a bureaucratic maze that we are trying our best to support and advocate on her behalf. And in that effort, we would hope that people would start contacting the city council. There is a resolution in the city council, resolution 64. It is tied up in committee. We're asking people to please contact James Gennaro. He is one of the city council people on the environment. James Gennaro. His phone number is 718-217-4969. 718-217-4969 to get the resolution 64 out of committee to a full vote, in which case everyone will need to be very on top of their personal council person to demand a full vote to close Indian Point. And on that note, Ken, you have an update on Indian Point as well.
Yes, sir. There was a rally at Indian Point this past weekend to shut down that nuclear plant. It's just 24 miles north of the border of New York City, and it's right on the Hudson River. And there is an evacuation plan, and the governor has approved it, and they're asking people to withdraw the letter of certification for the Indian Point Radiological and Emergency Evacuation Response Plan. Of course, the government doesn't have anything with a couple words, right? So please call the governor's office at 518-474-1041 and ask them to decommission Indian Point and withdraw the letter of certification for the Indian Point Radiological Emergency Evacuation Response Plan. 518-474-1041. And the evacuation plan is what shut down the Shoreham nuclear plant on Long Island, and there's a lot more people living near Indian Point than there is near Shoreham, so I think we can win this one. So call that number. Thank you.
Okay, as a way to introduce our show today, we have entitled the show The Ecology of War, and in certain respects, one can see that as a phrase of cognitive dissonance in such a way that war itself has absolutely nothing to do with a sensitivity to the ecology. Ecology brings up to mind the web of interactions, relationships, cause and effect relationships, understanding how things are conditioned to proceed and develop according to a historical view of their interactions in the totality of the organism-environment complex. And war itself is a complete failure of the human spirit to pay attention to the web of interactions and their effect on the immediate future and the long-term future.
Is that a bad thing?
Is that a bad thing? Well, if you're speaking of war in the days of winning a victory against an enemy, that might have a context. But in our day and age, where the technological means of violence have become so developed to the point of ecological devastation, mm-hmm. the goals have become unable to meet the needs of the reality of life on Earth. So there is a disconnect there. And briefly, I would like to just say that when you speak of war and you have a paradigm of war such as the war on terrorism, it really is in one respect, you have to see that as really the terror of warism. The war on drugs, otherwise known as the drug war, is really the war drug. And the war on cancer can really be seen as the cancer of the war on cancer. So underlying all this is really the sense that we are really the unspoken war is the war on nature, which we'd like to address today to point out that our actions in every way influence our environment. Our environment is not detached from ourselves. We are our environment, and we need to become realistic about what we do and face the facts of the war on nature, which is really what these wars really are. So with that, we'd like to introduce our guests. Ken?
Gar, are you with us on the phone?
Right here from Berkeley, California.
Go ahead. So, Gar, tell us what your work is and give us a brief introduction to what you're doing.
I work for a group called Earth Island Institute. It's a nonprofit environmental group that was founded by David Ross Brower. And David was a visionary in a lot of areas, and he woke up a lot of people about 25 years ago with a full-page article in the New York Times that was headlined War and the Environment. Up to that point, not too many people had actually thought of making the connection. So we've been watchdogging that issue ever since.
Here Do you have a website?
We're at Earth Island Institute. At the time that Dave put that ad in, he was with Friends of the Earth, an organization he founded, and he also founded Earth Island Institute about 20 years ago.
So that's what, earthislandinstitute.org is your website?
That'll get you to us, yeah.
All right.
Okay. And here, Hector, would you like to tell us your work?
Sure. My name is Hector Rivera, and I've been giving inspiration and information with the Welfare Poets for the past 12 years, and we recently started a youth leadership project called Sangre Nueva, which is New Blood, and it's doing a comparison between the environmental struggles in Puerto Rico, especially what's happening around Vieques, Puerto Rico, and environmental struggles in the South Bronx, in particular Hunts Point.
Ken, as the executive director of Peace Action of New York State, part of a national organization called Peace Action, 80,000 members nationwide, and just a couple of weeks ago, we hosted a 750-person rally at the Ethical Culture Society, essentially calling for nuclear abolition, calling attention to the connections between the nuclear buildup and future hostilities.
Okay, Faye, quickly. Mm-hmm.
Yes, my name is Faye Muir, and I'm with Croton Watershed Clean Water Coalition, and we're dedicated to preserving the good quality of New York's water for the future. We want it to be clean, safe, and affordable.
Okay, and Pika.
My name is Pika Trankel. I'm a herbalist and homeopath, and my work is basically in education, in personal health, and helping people to see that they can disengage from a consumeristic model of healthcare and thereby create a more holistic future for themselves and their families.
Okay, great. Ken, would you like to bring us up to date on some of the aspects of the struggle for abolition and give us some of your sense of where the focus should be right now with people's need to really face the nuclear peril in this day and age?
Well, back in 2000, Congress called for a nuclear posture review, and the Bush administration, well, of course, they obliged. And with the nuclear posture review, they're contemplating the blurring of the line between the use of conventional weapons and nuclear weapons. And in addition to that nuclear posture review, what's been longstanding now is the Stockpile Stewardship and Management Program. And everybody says, oh, it's about the safety and reliability of nuclear weapons, but they're really developing new nuclear weapons. And part of that stockpile stewardship program is a, listen to this one, robust nuclear earth penetrator. And this is imagined to be a usable nuke, a nuclear weapon that you can use that's well below the kilotonnage of the Hiroshima bomb, and imagined to be used to take out bunkers underneath the ground. And we're very worried about that because the Bush administration seems to think that using nuclear weapons is a viable option now. And that's something we're working on.
Well, isn't a nuclear weapon just a bigger bomb? I mean, they have a bigger bomb. You got to have a bigger bomb, right?
Well, that's the logic. In fact, India, when they tested in May of 1998, they justified the test because, well, the United States went ahead with their own testing and their own stockpile stewardship. And so our efforts to develop our nuclear weapons is just an excuse for others to do so as well. So proliferation is the huge issue right now.
And in the sense that we used to have what was called a policy of deterrence, has that actually shifted to really a stated first use? That is, has deterrence actually been, have we moved away from that official policy?
I think that the nuclear posture review is definitely reserving first use capability for the United States. We're reserving the right to even use nuclear weapons against non-nuclear states, Iran, Iraq, North Korea, and that's something that needs to be made very clear, is that first use is part of United States policy.
So in other words, that sets up a moral and ethical inconsistency, which says we used to have mutually assured destruction, now we've reached a point where it's a hierarchy of we can do it, you can't. Is that, and which then sets up the possibility for any nuclear state to say, well, if the United States reserves the right, why should not we? Is that correct?
Well, do as we say, not as we do. That's one way to sum up U.S. nuclear policy. I mean, we're signatories to the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty, and that says the cessation of nuclear arms race, complete nuclear disarmament. We're signatories to the comprehensive test ban, or we should have been by now, except for what happened in 1999. And that says the cessation of all nuclear weapons test explosions and all other nuclear explosions. But we go forward. Stockpile stewardship and management spending to a tune of $5 billion a year.
What does a nuclear weapon do that a regular weapon does not? In other words, why worry about specifically nuclear weapons rather than worry about the military or worry about all weapons or worry about all war?
Well, we need to worry about all weapons and all war. But nuclear weapons, it's a threshold that's unimaginable. I mean, the contemplated use of nuclear weapons and the possible use of nuclear weapons sets a standard for destruction that's unimaginable and unprecedented. And basically what's going on now is that with the contemplated development of the mini nukes, the bunker busters, that lowers the threshold of acceptability, where people can actually begin to think about bombing and using those types of bombs. And once you open up that Pandora's box, what's next?
You're listening to Ecologic on WBAI-FM 99.5 in New York City. Gar, do you have anything to add to what Ken's just said?
Yeah, the proliferation issue. The last thing we need to do is to be designing weapons that are smaller and more accessible to individuals. The administration, though, is preparing right now to unleash on our roads and railways a radiological risk that is also quite significant. The plan is to move a lot of nuclear waste from our power plants into temporary interim storage in Nevada on the surface of what eventually they hope will be an underground secure mine, which it won't be because it's in an earthquake zone in Nevada and it's the volcanic rock is turned out to be porous. But all that aside, if they do start rolling this waste down the railroad lines and roadways, it's going to pass through 43 states and within a mile of about 50 million people. A single railroad car of this waste, this is uranium fuel rods and stuff like that, is going to have the radiological equivalent of the dose that Hiroshima got multiplied by 240. The containers would be rolling for 30, 40 years over thousands of miles. If there are terrorists in the world, it's a gift to terrorists. Rolling targets, you can't possibly secure all this stuff. A vote's going to be coming up in about a week, so people should watch out for that. The
240 times the size of Hiroshima,
not
traveling
size,
with
the radiological
okay.
equivalent.
If, and it's going within a mile of 50 million people.
Yeah.
How do they justify this?
well, one of the justifications is they want to secure the waste, so it will be immobilized against any release.
wait a minute. Having it travel thousands of miles is to make it more secure.
Right. An alternative is to store it in place. The problem is that the nuclear industry never figured out how to get rid of all this waste that accumulated. When they first got underway, the idea was science in the future will come up with a solution. Science always comes up with a solution. We don't have to worry about it. Well, here it is. We're in the future. There's no solution. The waste storage ponds are filling up. Some of the power plants are having to store this stuff on the surface now, and the government, the taxpayers, are legally obliged to take care of this stuff and handle it somehow to erase this embarrassing fiscal and environmental problem that the nuclear industry is saddled with. The only solution they've been able to advance is this so-called mobile Chernobyl system of rolling this stuff across railroads and highways to storage in these huge nuclear dumps.
Okay. You know, I would like to bring into this discussion the issue of what is referred to as depleted uranium, which we feel is such a sanitized, euphemistic expression that it really prevents people from facing the facts of what is really being done with these weapons. They are weapons of perpetual punishment. If we think we are going to vanquish our enemies and be the victors, we are engaging in a situation of utter moral depravity, because we are creating environments and landscapes that are continued to punish, that are distorted, twisted environments where the human psyche then has to live with a daily onslaught. This is how violence is created, this is how violence is perpetuated, and this will come back to us, and we are absolutely ignorant of the reality of ecological relationships if we think we can go around the world winning wars in such a way. Hector, you've been to Vieques. Can you give us a sense of both the beauty and the devastation you've experienced in Vieques?
Certainly. the group, the Welfare Poets, we just recently came from Vieques performing out there in May. And you know, everyone I've spoken to who was there with us on the trip, and people who have gone on different occasions, whether it was to do civil disobedience or to be part of the movement, anti-militarization movement in Vieques, everyone who's gone there has said they want to live there. It's so beautiful. And yet, most people are only able to see one-third of that island, if that much, because two-thirds of it is controlled by the military. So while I was there, I wasn't able to go into the military range, you know, without risking getting arrested and facing 6 months in jail, which is what the time they're given over there. But when people in Vieques stopped the bombing for a whole year, which was April 19th, after David Sarnes' death in 1999, who was killed by four military bombs, Navy bombs, until a year later, which was like May 2000, people went into the bombing range and they were able to take lots of pictures and document a lot of the destruction there. We're talking about an area, especially on the east coast of Vieques, where there are more craters per mile than there are on the moon. Mm-hmm. You know, just the absolute craters of all these bombings. And of course, because of pressure, from the Vieques, the U.S. government had and the military had to admit that they dropped over close to 300 bombs in 1 year, which were depleted uranium bombs.
They are using radioactive armaments.
Yeah, let's call it depleted uranium what it is, radioactive bullets.
Okay, radioactive
bullets. Okay, and the radioactive bullets are lying around Vieques.
They sure are, and some of them, of course, unexploded bombs. In addition, like we know, you know, that pollution doesn't just stay there. So this is an issue for the Caribbean. You know, the wind blows and it'll go to St. Thomas. It'll go to St. Croix, the same pollution that's there.
In other words, the radioactive bullets are making the dirt on Vieques radioactive.
They sure are. Including, you know, this is just some of the metals, which is a very serious one, is the depleted uranium. I'm sure a lot of the listeners of WBAI are very educated in terms of how in Iraq, these types of bombs are being dropped, right? Depleted uranium bombs. And where did they get tested, or where did they first drop these bombs, is in Vieques, Puerto Rico.
Right, so Vieques has become the way to facilitate the use of these, and in that we've created a situation where environments are sacrificed for such ignoble and dubious goals. Which brings me also to Yugoslavia. Ken, do you have some information on what happened in Yugoslavia?
Yeah, I'd like to also add, let's call these dirty weapons.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Right, they blamed this Puerto Rican guy, said he has dirty weapons.
Who has the dirty weapons?
I forgot his name, the Puerto Rican Taliban.
Yes, we have the dirty weapons. Mm-hmm. We have the dirty bullets. Let's call these uranium weapons. Bosnia and Kosovo, Operation Allied Force, the war in Yugoslavia, conducted in Kosovo, 31,000 rounds of uranium ammunition back in 1999. Bosnia, around Sarajevo, 10,800 uranium shells. This is back in 94 and 95. In 1999, NATO warned of, quote, possible toxic threat, end of quote. Portugal and Italy are accusing NATO of a cover-up. It took NATO 18 months to reveal the battlefield sites, where the munitions were being used. European countries across the board are conducting tests to see what's becoming of their soldiers and the military personnel. So the arrogance of NATO, and the United States in particular, is astounding. Astounding and astonishing.
So in one respect, you could say that nuclear weapons are being used right now, and they are creating these unthinkable landscapes as we go about our business here in the United States. Is that really a way to frame the understanding?
I don't think there's another way to frame it. That is the way to frame the issue.
Gar, do you have anything you'd like to add there?
Yeah, that we are already committing nuclear war against other people, and we shouldn't mince words about it.
Right.
That's a violation of not only international law, but common decency.
You know, it's also, you know, we know about these bombs being dropped in all these other places, Bosnia and Iraq, but this is American citizens, you know, people. Whether they were forced to have American citizenship or not is not what we're discussing now, but we're talking about American citizens, 10,000, in Vieques, Puerto Rico, the so-called backyard of the United States, where, again, like you said, nuclear war is being waged on people with depleted uranium bombs are being dropped.
Now, what are the prevailing winds from Vieques? In other words, where the radioactive soil where does it go? Who else is getting irradiated?
Well, we're talking about the other Virgin Islands in the area. Of course, we're talking about Vieques. Puerto Rico's an archipelago, so the other islands of Puerto Rico, including the mainland. You know, so other...
All the Greater Antilles.
The Greater Antilles, exactly.
So Jamaica is being radiated by the same radioactive bullets that Vieques is being radiated by.
I'm sure my colleague here and other colleagues would know, how far does this pollution travel? Maybe you can speak upon that.
Well, basically, what I've read here is that when depleted uranium-238 hits a target, about 70% of the shell is vaporized, and 60% of the resultant particles are very tiny, and they can be taken indefinitely on wind currents and inhaled into the lungs, or if the particle is a little larger, then it gets lodged in the throat, can be swallowed, and it can do untold damage to anybody.
And we know from the Chernobyl accident that those particles don't stay on the continent they came from.
Mm.
They go all over.
So that far it travels. Well, in Vieques in particular, there's 23% higher rate of of cancer than the rest of Puerto Rico. I haven't heard enough tests about asthma itself in Vieques, but everywhere I went and I asked the question, how many people know one person with asthma? 90% of the people raised their hands.
Hmm.
So that tells me it's the same type of question I ask in Hunts Point, actually.
And of course, you're messing people's lung capacity, so therefore you're going to have it show up as asthma, right, Pika?
Well, yes, and I think that, you know, we can make a very distinct correlation just in philosophy between what's happening globally and what's happening in health in general. I mean, this idea that we as a country do these things around the world and have absolutely no sense of personal responsibility or consequences. I mean, this is what we spoke about on our last program about immunity being this idea of being exempt from your environment. I think that is a cultural sickness in our day. The whole militaristic view of the world, the cultural view, is very parallel in the military and in medicine. So I'll give you a few examples. This idea of aggressive intervention with short-term results. No one is taking a long view of these weapons or of the health consequences of asthma, of cancer. We have such a double standard in terms of what we consider dangerous. On the one hand, we consider these bombs or the transport of radioactive material perfectly safe because the government says so. And then we are told and believe that the sun itself, the giver of life, is ultimately dangerous to our health and we have to be protecting ourselves against this. I mean, this is totally ludicrous. We won't even go into, another show will go into the whole issue of sunscreens and how they're not even effective and also a billion-dollar industry. But toxic treatments, you know, toxic approaches to any disease in the world, this is acceptable, that the benefits always outweigh the risk. This idea of winning and losing. And the biggest issue, I think, is the high profit motive, both in war and in the medical machine. With an incredible byproduct of toxicity. And I liked what Gar had to say about this idea that all along we've thought, our culture has said, science will figure out a solution in the future, and this is certainly true of all the medical waste we've generated, a lot of which is radioactive.
Now let's take a little musical break, and then we'll come right back for more of Ecologic here on WDAI-FM 99.5 in New York City.
Just look at mouths we have to feed. Take a look at all the suffering we breathe. So many lonely faces scattered all around, searching for what they need. Is this the world we created? Sitting on his throne, waiting for life to go by.
That was Queen off of one of the Greenpeace benefit albums. You're listening to Ecologic. We're here every other Tuesday from 11 a.m. until Gary Null at noon. I'm Ken Gale.
I'm David Ocuto.
Hector Rivera.
Ken Esty.
Faye Muir.
Pika Trinkle.
And Garcia.
Hey. Oh, yes, I'm sorry, Gar. Your disembodied voice has reappeared. Thank you so much.
And we've been talking about the ecology of war.
We have some fun on the way with July 4th coming. We'd like to just give you a little bit of a understanding that we are going to have some fun with fireworks soon. But before we do that... Yeah.
And as the first July 4th after the 9/11 tragedy, you know there's going to be a lot of jingoism, and we're trying to give a slight bit of balance to that. How could we possibly do that in an hour? at any rate, Hector, why don't you continue?
Sure. The ecology of war. 60 years of bombings in Vieques, Puerto Rico, 60-plus years, have done terrible damage to the beautiful coral reef, which, I mean, I don't know the science on the coral reef, but it must take years and hundreds and thousands of years for this coral reef just to form and stuff like that. In addition, you know, Vieques is just one manifestation of U.S. colonialism in Puerto Rico and the militarization of Puerto Rico. There are 20-plus military bases there, including the U.S. Southern Command, which recently stated that they're moving. So that in Puerto Rico, napalm for Vietnam was tested in the rainforest, beautiful rainforest called El Yunque, which is a national rainforest. So they've done other types of bombings and practices in Puerto Rico, not only in Vieques. One of the other things that people currently are fighting around is the Navy taking tons and tons of gallons of water from the people's use, and then of course not paying for it, of course, and then of course then also destroying it with their pollution from the military and the bombings and stuff like that. So Vieques, Puerto Rico, backyard of the United States, is just one little example of how the U.S. wages war across the world.
So they're doing in the soil, they're doing in the air, they're doing in the water.
Yes.
And of course we're doing that right here in New York State.
Yes, it's interesting to note that the latest information from the Department of Environmental Protection on the water quality and the different products found in the water, we find that in the Croton watershed, which is close to Indian Point, there is a concentration of strontium, which is a product of nuclear energy. And in particular, strontium-90, which is not found in the environment, that is a byproduct. And that can be cancerous. And in the report, the DEP tells us that there is three times the amount of strontium in that particular watershed than is found in any other water supply in the state. And but they tell us also that no strontium-90 has been found. Of course, there is no...
Wait, who's saying that there isn't any?
The Department of Environmental Protection in their 2001 water quality report.
And who's saying that there is?
I am not aware of anyone saying that there is strontium-90. They're telling us that there's three times as much strontium, but they have not found any strontium-90.
Oh, yeah, right. I should add that Indian Point, our little Chernobyl on the Hudson, sends out strontium-90 into the atmosphere every few days. Hmm. In the operation of a nuclear power plant, of course, we all have heard of radioactive decay. Well, uranium turns into lead eventually. On the way, it gives off strontium. Strontium-90 is radioactive strontium. Every few days, because this stuff accumulates in the reactor vessel, it's just vented into the air. They used to do it every 2 weeks. When I wrote Chernobyl on the Hudson about 10 years ago, it was every 2 weeks. They've upped it. Now it's every few days. It tosses it in. The wind takes it wherever it goes. The Croton Reservoir is just downstream. So, yeah, this strontium-90 coming out of Indian Point into the New York City water supply.
Okay, before we lose too much more of our hour, Gar, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, Gar, now, you are a former pyrotechnician, is that correct?
Oh, my dirty secret, yeah.
Now, could you give us a sense of how you went from master of the pyrotechnics to master of the advocacy against the pyrotechnics?
Well, getting into it was as easy as growing up in America. I was making bottle rockets and my own fireworks when I was a kid. And I don't know. I think we're taught to enjoy explosions. The media just surrounds us with that kind of information, bright lights and big sounds. But after doing this for a couple of years and doing shows at the Hollywood Bowl and for the National Bicentennial, I actually started reading some information about what was in these fireworks. Well, you know, working in the business, you know that it's that you've got aluminum and magnesium and copper and even strontium. There's a whole bunch of other stuff, too. There's some companies that you can find on the Internet that supply ingredients for these fireworks. And there's more than 100 different ingredients. Some of them are really bizarre. You got things like xylene and chlorine and polyvinyl chloride. You would think in fireworks you'd have boric acid or hexachloroethane or sorbitol. Some fireworks have sorbitol. And a common ingredient is barium, radioactive barium.
Really, that's known to be in the composition. Isn't it?
Yeah, and even the basic gunpowder ingredients, charcoal, saltpeter, coal byproducts, they're carcinogenic, and a lot of lead in fireworks. Clinton, before he left office, actually passed a ban against importing any skyrockets with lead in them, which is basically all foreign skyrockets. So I haven't checked yet to see if George Bush has overturned that Clinton rule yet, but I wouldn't be surprised. Anyway, they produce a lot of smoke, as anybody who's seen a show knows, and that smoke goes downwind, and there's a lot of particulate stuff that falls out of the sky. And I've had to, on occasion, stand downwind and put out fires from the stuff that falls, and you know, we've gotten complaints from people after we've shot shows about their cars being damaged, and I've come out of shows with my clothing pitted with holes and smoking, and choking is not uncommon in the business. The stuff is unpleasant to breathe, and it's become a big problem around the world now. Over in India, they celebrate Diwali, the festival of lights, with a lot of fireworks. The government's now starting to complain because after each one of these celebrations, the hospitals fill up with people who are sneezing, coughing, and headaches. And
direct correlation with cause and effect there.
And
you wrote an article, Fallout Over Disneyland. Can you describe how the residents around Disneyland are dealing with this environmental impact?
Yeah, it's an interesting case of what you might call environmental racism, because people who live next door to what is sometimes called the happiest place on earth experience a lot of health problems, predictably a lot of asthma, and damage to their houses, inability to sleep, the noise every night that they have fireworks shows. It makes it impossible to conduct conversations. One of the guys who was interviewed by some university journalists had this to say. My wife has asthma. I have two kids with asthma. When the fireworks explode, the neighborhood turns into a wartime movie set. People start to run for cover as the ashes rain down on their cars and homes. Car alarms go off. They whistle and scream. Dogs yelp. Babies cry in the darkness. And some of the people down there, Vietnam veterans, are even having flashbacks when they hear these bombs go off. And after about 10 or 15 minutes of this stuff, some of the reporters have described something that looks like a dark, smoggy haze, often 10 stories high and a half a mile wide, moving downwind over the neighborhood.
So in effect, I'd say maybe over the last 10 years, have these shows become more consistently a happening that people want to see, and expanding on the actual amount and grandiosity? Is it correct to say that we're on a continual upswing of upping the ante with these shows?
Yeah, the fireworks shows are a tourist draw, kind of like touring, you know, if you want to draw moths, you turn on a lamp. And in this case, they're turning up the voltage quite a bit. There are some of these parks, and it's not just Disneyland. A lot of tourist parks down in Southern California and around the country and around the world are adding bigger and better and brighter and nastier fireworks shows to please the walk-in crowd, and it's more entertaining for the visitors, but it's more of a headache, literally, for the people who live downwind.
And for really, one needs to really understand that this is an entirely unregulated industry in terms of its impact on the environment. Is that correct? Nobody's monitoring this.
Explicitly so. The Southern California Air Quality Management Board specifically exempts fireworks from any kind of regulation.
Right. So what we're suggesting here is that instead of encouraging your children to get excited and to look forward to these man-made displays that pale in significance when we get a glimpse at the true splendor and wonder of the uncorrupted night sky, maybe parents should consider encouraging and inspiring their children to get involved with environmental protection, because environmental protection is human protection. We are the environment, and maybe children wouldn't be so demanding to see these spectacles if they were encouraged to have a true holistic concern for the world that surrounds them. And maybe, Gar, you can just give us one little, I guess there is a little bit of a substitute that we can get people to think about. What might that be instead of these pyrotechnic displays?
Well, that was a beautiful statement that you put out there. One thing that I would like to throw in is there is a link between war and fireworks.
Okay.
And I think we've seen it more often recently with our video images. Fireworks are being used as a way to kind of sanitize warfare, the kind of warfare that we're engaged in now, aerial war instead of ground combat war.
Right, remote war.
Right, and we've seen the broadcasts from our assault on Iraq, and the descriptions literally were, it's like fireworks. And recently we saw the Israeli detonation of the Palestinian security building, and it looked like a fireworks show.
Mm.
And I think a lot of kids are growing up and they're making a connection that war is little more than an entertaining fireworks show. And that, of course, is very dangerous information.
Very dangerous. Basically, it's a form of social engineering to detach people from their sense of reverence with creation. And we have to take that seriously and understand, to face the facts about what I'm calling really is the war on nature. With every turn we make, it's a sense of understanding the impact of our actions. And you did mention, though, that the laser light shows are a somewhat of a decent alternative. There are people who are pursuing laser light shows instead of these pyrotechnic displays. Is that correct?
That's right. I think the most environmentally sane thing you can do to celebrate at night is just to watch the stars.
Yeah, and I would say the most increasingly wonderful thing you can do is work to clear the skies so we can get back to those beautiful constellations we once knew.
Right, and there actually are some places on the web, the marvelous ever-changing web, where you can log on and watch your own virtual fireworks show. You can even set up and orchestrate your own displays and sit back and watch it in the comfort of your own home without freaking out the neighbor's dogs. No pollution, and completely environmentally sane and sound, except for the electrons. If they're produced by a coal-burning power plant, you still got a little bit of karmic responsibility there, but that's an alternative.
Okay, great. Ken, should we go around and let people give a wrap-up?
Yeah, because we're almost done with the show.
Let's start with Ken. Ken, can you give us a sense of how people can plug in to confront the necessity of abolition? We are at a historical moment where nuclear weapons have to be abolished. We have to design the political relationships that will do this and will be protective of the creation. Can you give us a sense of there?
Sure. After this week's July 4th recess, Congress comes back together next week. Conference committee, where they hammer out the differences between the House and Senate bill on defense authorization. The bunker buster funding is still in the House. It's not in the Senate. It may get reintroduced for the final bill. Everybody is encouraged to call senators, congresspeople, everybody, and say no to the bunker buster, no to usable nukes. That's one step. Second step is to go online to urgentcall.org. And the urgent call by Jonathan Schell and Randy Forsberg and David Courtwright. And the points go like this. Renounce the first use of nuclear weapons. Take nuclear weapons off hair trigger alert. End the development, testing, production of nuclear weapons. Ratify the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty. And with Russia, call for the mutual verified destruction of nuclear weapons withdrawn under treaties. And finally, call for more nuclear weapons cuts and really call for abolition. That's the urgentcall.org. 6 points. Go online. Call your congressperson. Call your senator. Get involved. Don't wait. There is no time.
Thank you. And Hector, would you like to give us how people can connect with some of the work that you're doing?
Sure. Well, this evening, if you want to find out more information on what's happening in Vieques and the 60 years of military bombings there, there will be an admiral and a journalist and a historian from Puerto Rico who will be speaking in an event at Columbia University, 5 p.m., 114 to 116th Street, a building in that area on Broadway, and is sponsored by the Puerto Rican Legal Defense Fund. There's a new round of
when
bombs.
When is that? What day?
This is today, this evening.
This evening, right.
Yes, this evening, Tuesday night, 5 p.m. at Columbia University, 114th to 116th and Broadway. There's also a new round of bombings that are scheduled to start in August and September. So there will be different protests and even potential civil disobedience in New York as well as in Puerto Rico. So look for that.
Great. And Faye, could you give us a...
Yes, I would say that it would be great if folks could call Hillary Clinton and ask her to support alternatives to chemical filtration. As you can see, even though we suspect that strontium-90 is getting into our supply, by the time that the DPE tests it, once the water is in our reservoirs, the natural multi-barrier filtration has already reduced it to non-detectable levels. Chemical filtration plant at the end of the line cannot do that. Mm-hmm. So we would like people to make sure their voices are heard and that we want protection of the water, that we want alternatives to a chemical filtration plant, and we want Hillary Clinton to know that.
Okay. And can we get Pika for a final word?
Okay, well, I would just like to say that I know there are probably a lot of parents out there who said to themselves, how can I get my children not to want to see the fireworks and not to be so involved in that explosion mentality? And I would just say, take them out of the city, take them to a place anywhere where you can actually see the night sky. Really, it's the beauty of Vieques, it's the beauty of the night sky, it's the giving forth of the earth, of the healing plants, for instance, in Rockland County, which has one of the highest incidents of breast cancer in the Northeast. The plant that is coming up most prolific is the pokeweed plant, Phytolacca, which happens to be a breast cancer remedy. So let's not forget that the earth itself is alive and is healing us every moment. Thank you.
And Gar?
Yeah, this is time for action. The mobile Chernobyl legislation is also coming up. I don't have the websites, but if you go to the internet and type in mobile Chernobyl, you'll get in contact with a number of activist groups.
And Gar, with Earth Island, can you just quickly mention how Earth Island is constituted, just to give people an idea of the plugging into Earth Island quickly?
Earth Island's a nonprofit.
30 seconds.
We're a big green tent. We have a lot of different projects that we help get started, and they do good works and frequently go on their own.
All right, thanks a lot. And that brings us to another close of EcoLogic. Join us at 11 a.m. in 2 weeks. Next week, Create Your Healthy Home will be in this same time slot, so tune in then as well. And stay tuned for Gary Null. And we'll go out with a little more Judy Gorman. This is called Superman's Warning. Oops, that's not what I wanted to play. That's what I wanted to play.
was on a happened to you.